This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
When you wish upon a star, make no difference who you are, anything your heart desires.
Place to Be Nation, when you wish upon a star, all your dreams will come true. Welcome back to another episode of Pop Goes the Classics. This is our look at the Disney animated full-length feature films. We're on our second episode. We've already had our first one. We broke down Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and tonight we're talking about 1940s Pinocchio. But of course, I'm not here by myself to break it down. I'm here with our little Disney crew here we have over at Place to Be Nation. First off, she is one half of Geek and Sassy over on the Jenny position, Miss Miranda Berthold. How are you tonight, Miranda?
I am alive, so I guess we will go with that.
That's very good. Well, I mean, if you weren't alive, you wouldn't be able to be on the show, right? Is that correct? I'm following that logic.
Maybe not. Did I come back from the dead just to do this podcast and haunt Andy and Chad? Maybe I did.
Well, okay, well, you just mentioned his name. He is one of the purveyors over on the new podcast feed, The North-South Connection, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good, Andy. I'm alive as well, and I've got no strings
to hold you down.
That's all right.
That's a good one.
Yes, very good. Yeah, Miranda, I was kind of like hoping you were going to say, like, I won't tell a lie or, you know, something like that. Like, Cricket's the name.
Sorry. Brain is...
Well, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll pick it up with, you know, talking about a beloved movie. So, Pinocchio released in 1940. It's an animated musical fantasy. It was distributed by RKO Radio Pictures and was based on an Italian children's novel, The Adventures of Pinocchio by Carlo Collodi. It was the second, as I said, animated feature film produced by Disney. The plot involves an old woodcarver named Geppetto who carves a wooden puppet named Pinocchio. The puppet is brought to life by a blue fairy who informs him that he can become a real boy if he proves to be brave, truthful, and selfish. Pinocchio's efforts to become a real boy involve encounters with a host of unsavory characters, and it was, you know, groundbreaking in achievement in areas of animation, giving realistic movement to vehicles, machinery, and natural elements such as rain, lightning, smoke, shadows, and water. And it was released on February 7th, 1940. Critical analysis of Pinocchio identifies it as a simple morality tale that teaches children of the benefits of hard work and conventional values. It was the first animated feature to win a competitive Academy Award. It won two for Best Music Original Score and for Best Music Original Song for When You Wish Upon a Star. Initially, box office disaster, but that was in part due to World War II cutting off European and Asian markets overseas. It eventually made a profit in a 1945 reissue and is considered one of the greatest animated films of all time with a 100% rating on the website Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, has a quite the legacy, which we will discuss. So let's start with you, Miranda. Let's talk about your memories of seeing Pinocchio for the first time, maybe first time you watched it with Caden. What's your general overall feelings on this film?
So overall feelings have changed throughout my life as far as like when you watched it, which most things do if it's something from your childhood and then you bring it again, like maybe when you're a teenager and then maybe again when you have a kid, you know, different points in your life, things look different, feel different, all that. I honestly, it's going to be like Snow White, where I don't remember exactly when I saw it. Like, I remember watching it. I remember watching it multiple times, but, like, I can't point out. It may have been another one that my grandmother had on tape, because, you know, that was a thing. So I don't remember initially the first time, but I do remember that I liked it, because I would watch it, like, repetitively.
Okay.
So I remember that. I remember watching it with Caden when he was very, very little, and he showed interest, but it didn't. It wasn't until he was a little bit older that it held his interest.
Yes. Something we're going to note is that this film. I'm curious to hear Chad's thoughts on how his boys reacted to this, because it's a little scary. So, Chad, what are your personal thoughts as you watching it? And then talk about it as a father watching it.
Yeah, it was one I know I had the VHS tape for when we were kids, but I don't think it was very heavy in the rotation at all. And then I do remember my brother did a play production of Pinocchio when he was like maybe 10, 11. Which I'm 4 years older, so I was 14 or 15. So I remember watching him there, but, you know, as a teenager, I wasn't too invested in my little brother's play. So I don't remember too much from that. But as far as my kids, Caden is a daredevil as far as he loves, like, scary stuff, hocus pocus. You know, none of that is any problem for him. He went and saw Rise of the Skywalkers as a five-year-old, handled all those parts fine. He'll ride, like, Tower of Terror when we go to Disney World. So
wow.
he's certainly more brave than I was at his age. So he really likes Pinocchio, actually. I would say of the, I guess, early era of animated movies Disney has, I don't even know what they would go up to, but maybe to like even like the Cinderella Sleeping Beauty. I would say Pinocchio is one of the ones that we watch the most often.
Okay.
So it's pretty heavy in the rotation.
I don't know if my kids have actually seen Pinocchio. I know like my daughter was going to, you know, watch all these films with me, and it just didn't work out where, you know, she was at her mom's when I watched this. My son really, you know, I don't think he has the patience for some of the older films now that he's like almost a teenager. So, you know, but I saw it again. I don't remember exactly when I saw it. I remember seeing it, having it on VHS. I remember it being a little scary because, you know, the whole Pleasure Island scene, which we'll talk about, and Monstro and, you know, and Stromboli. These are all, you know, very kind of scary characters and scary scenes with the transformations and the settings. So, you know, some of the things we will talk about as we go. One of the first things I noticed was the, you know, the first thing you see on the screen, like kind of like a little warning, contains tobacco depictions in the ratings when it comes up on Disney Plus.
Oh, I didn't even pay attention to that.
Because that is a no-no in Disney films today. I don't believe they don't allow characters to smoke in their movies.
You know, a lot of characters don't, not just Disney, but in general, a lot of characters on TV, other movies, they don't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's very few I can think of. I mean, even usually if they're like depicting maybe classic character, you know, like in The Irishman, but besides that, yeah,
unless it suits the character, really fits the character, you don't see it a lot. I mean, there are actors and actresses that are smokers off screen, but their characters, you never see them. I mean, I think Jennifer Aniston, I don't know if she still does, I think was a heavy smoker, and she actually had to smoke like in like one episode of Friends. So you just find the depictions of tobacco today are very, you know, careful with how they are.
Definitely.
Especially in kids' films.
I can't think of any animated movie in recent vintage, even to like the, you know, like the Little Mermaid, like that era, like the golden era in the early 90s. I don't think they were.
Go ahead, Miranda.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, actually, because I was just sitting here thinking, and I was like, wait, in Great Mouse Detective, which is one we're going to get to later, I think Basil pulls out a pipe, but now, if I'm not mistaken, it's actually a bubble pipe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, in my head, quickly go through it. I know they didn't smoke in Lion King, but in Aladdin, there's, like, one quick scene. I think the genie's holding a cigarette. I don't think he actually smokes it, where he does, like, a French, little French scene.
Oh, You know, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, so it's possible. Yeah.
But that's the only one I could that really will pop in my head, which is, you know, it's a good thing for, you know, not to glorify it or, you know, because of, well, something we will get to the Pleasure Island scene as we go. So, you know, it starts off with an iconic song. Now, Chad, where does When You Wish Upon a Star, where's that in your rankings so far?
I would think as far as classic Disney songs, it's probably a top five for me, I think. I mean, it's very iconic and still used in a lot of their advertisement and a lot of their shows. And I really liked both the usage of Jiminy Cricket as your narrator for this film. And then I think it's an interesting choice that they started it off right away with the song, which I don't know if they necessarily knew it was going to be as big a song for them as it became, but just, you know, like any of the Disney ideals that they try to push and that, you know, you have, it's been what, 80 years now, they still come through when you hear When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah, I mean, when I see that, like, opening slate, like, with the castle, and it's changed over the years. First, it was like a little, you know, cartoon with just, like, you know, a silhouette, and now it's like this 3D thing. When my arms have chills right now because it just, in my brain, I guess it sets off something in my brain that tells me I'm going to go somewhere that, you know, a world of fantasy, and I can just kind of shut out the outside world and being a grown up and stuff for 90 minutes. So it kind of, you know, makes me happy that little 5 second, 10 second thing in the whole song is great. Miranda, what are your feelings?
I'm with Chad. It's in the top five. I feel like it is overall probably, and I could be wrong, I don't know statistically, but I feel like it's going to be high across the board for, like, people in general. I've heard this played at, like, weddings. I've heard it played, you know, when they do, like, baby showers. So it's like, you know, it can have a lot of different meaning to different people, even though it is a Disney song.
Yeah, we heard after every Super Bowl for how long since?
Yes,
since I think it was the
I'm going to Disney World, and then
I believe that started in 1986 with the Giants Cowboys. I don't remember what Super Bowl number that is, even though I'm a Giants fan. But yeah, that was you know they went to both Phil Simms and John Elway. And said, you know, if you say we're going to, you know, what do you do next? I'm going to Disney World. We're going to give you a grant, $100,000 and a trip to Disney.
Right. We'll let you go. So if you do this, so now it's a thing that it stuck. I remember watching that on like an ESPN greatest Super Bowl blah, blah, blah mm-hmm. thing that they mm-hmm. do. And I think I remember them saying, like, here's where it came from. And this is how it started.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Are you guys fans of the storybook opening? Because that was kind of a thing that was done for a number of years.
Yeah, you'll see that pretty frequently mm-hmm. with the first podcast and movies we go through. Mm-hmm. I do think it looks dated from a modern eye.
Yeah.
But I do understand from, like, a storytelling vehicle device, it put you in the mindset as a, you know, probably novice theater goer for future feature length films that, okay, we're going into a fantastical story. Mm-hmm. So let me give you this broad visual where you can actually see that. So I understand it from that, but it does feel dated to see it now. Mm-hmm.
All right. And then, so of course you mentioned Jiminy Cricket. Who you know, this was just the beginning for Jiminy. He went on to, you know, be featured in a lot of shorts. He was on the Mickey Mouse Club. Then we walked through the toy shop, and I really love how they kind of broke it down to Jiminy Cricket's level, and you saw it from his perspective, how he interacted with all the toys and the clocks and everything like that. Miranda, what did you think of Jiminy Cricket's introduction?
I honestly liked how they introduced him, like, from his perspective, how he saw things, how things were, instead of, I don't know, coming in and making it, it's like you were on his level, you were his friend, you really were there talking to him and like, enjoying the story from him, and I remember really enjoying that as a kid, and that is one part I still enjoy now, is that he's such an integral part of the whole ordeal. Even when he's not present on screen, he still is. Mm-hmm. And he's the reason that you're getting this story, essentially. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we're also introduced to Figaro and Cleo. Figaro is the little kitten, and Cleo is a goldfish. Mm-hmm. And Figaro, actually, I'm reading here on IMDb, he was actually Walt Disney's favorite character. And Disney pushed for the kitten to appear in the film as much as possible. And he had swapped out Minnie Mouse's little Cocker Spaniel with Figaro, who actually did star in a number of shorts over the next few years. Mm-hmm. Chad, what about Figaro and Cleo?
Figaro actually is someone that on rewatch, I enjoy him a lot more than mm-hmm. I did just kind of as a kid, where... I mean, I would say as a kid, this movie to me was kind of, okay, Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket, Geppetto, those were the three main takeaways. But as we get through it, I really think the ensemble cast they create serves their purpose, and Figaro is a part of that, and Cleo does a lot, too, for to be a goldfish that doesn't mm-hmm. talk. She's actually able to add a lot of kind of sassiness in character to counteract what's going on with Figaro. So mm-hmm. it works good. It's a nice dynamic between them two.
Yeah, quite the expressive fish.
Yeah, yes, actually. I think mm-hmm. that's something that you would see that they would come back to a lot, too. I mean, with the dwarves, which were the biggest part of the ensemble cast with Snow White, you know, they each had, of course, their own personality based off their name. But you would see very kind of small one note gags of, you know, Sneezy's always sneezing, mm-hmm. Sleepy's always asleep, blah, blah, blah. Really only, I would say, Dopey and Doc and Grumpy had kind of character arcs there, those three out of the seven. But, you know, Figaro and Cleo, and as we talked about, Jiminy Cricket, those three are a big part of this cast for this movie.
All right. And then one thing I noticed as I'm watching is the sound effects usage increased tremendously. It's only 3 years and it's only the second one, but there was like a lot of steps forward in this movie as compared to Snow White. Like the blue fairy comes in and knights Jiminy Cricket. I was like, you know, I don't remember that happening. And then I believe Geppetto has a gun. It was in my notes. Did Geppetto like, you know, broke out a gun, like, right, for trying to remember what happened. I watched this like 2 weeks ago. My memory is killing me now. But, you know, it's kind of like a sign of the times, kind of going with the whole the smoking thing.
Geppetto's going to town on his pipe too as he goes to bed, so that's a big thing with Geppetto. He's definitely has his pipe ready to go. So mm-hmm.
And then we started running into some not so good characters in this movie. The first one we run into, first two actually, is J. Worthington Falfellow, or otherwise known as Honest John the Fox, and his companion Gideon the Cat. And they, you know, serve as the, I guess, you know, Jiminy's the conscience, the little angel on one shoulder, while these guys are your little devil on there. Mm-hmm. And they, convince them to join Stromboli, who is another a bad guy in this film, to join his puppet show. Now, Miranda, where do you rank this trio? Even though they, you know, we will see Honest John and Gideon more than once in this movie, but let's kind of just say how their introduction and then in Stromboli as a character.
I don't don't remember being as scared of them as other people have come out and been like, man, I was terrified of, you know, this whole ordeal. I don't remember being scared of them. Maybe I was. I do definitely think it shows the... It goes ahead and introduces, like, temptation and... my brain has gone dead on the words that I want here. But it brings forth, like, hey, kids, this is what temptation is, and this is how persuasion looks, and this is bad people can not look normal. Because, I mean, essentially, they're a fox and stuff, but, like, essentially, just looks like a normal person walking down the street.
Just because somebody's nice to you doesn't mean they're a good person.
Exactly.
Chad, what about you with these guys?
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting approach, as it's easy to compare directly to Snow White because that was the only other feature length film we had right now in canon, and it had, you know, that we talked about the old hag, which was a very evil direct character and only one evil character. And here, again, they kind of took a more ensemble approach, as you had Honest John and Gideon, who does not speak in the movie, but is a lackey, probably, for lack of a better term, of Honest John. And then also Stromboli, who works there. And then, you know, as we get into the later stages of the movie, you have another kind of weird... anti-hero, if you want to consider Monstro that, but I liked how they each, I think, served their purpose. I don't think any of them individually is going to rank highly in greatest Disney villains of all time, but for what they were trying to do for this movie and showing Pinocchio's journey and kind of the conflicting things he'll deal with his conscience and whatnot, it was very effective.
And we get one of the song that Chad mentioned earlier, Got No Strings. Got that famous scene where Pinocchio becomes Stromboli's star attraction, and but then he turns out, you know, he wants to go home for the night. You know, this was fun, but you know, now I'm good. I want to go home.
This is consequences to your actions moment here, for sure.
And he gets locked in a birdcage. Jiminy arrives to see Pinocchio, and this is kind of like his first lesson, where the blue fairy, you know, asks him, you know, what happened, and he constructs a tall tale, so to speak, and this is where the very famous Pinocchio nose growing, because Pinocchio, the character, actually isn't in the public domain. So, you know, it's not a Walt Disney invention. A lot of people have that misconception sometimes when they, you know, they think he invented the Seven Dwarfs and all that, even though he did name them. But, you know, that's why you see it in Geico commercials or in the Shrek films, the whole Pinocchio, I cannot tell a lie, where his nose grows, and he actually, you know, it starts growing branches on it.
They were fairy tales prior. Mm-hmm. Like, these were fairy tale stories that went back before he decided to make them into a movie that is now known as Disney.
Yes, he kind of Disneyfied it, I guess, if you want to call it that. You know, he vows to be good from now on, and the blue fairy, you know, returns his nose to its original form, sets him free, while warning that this will be the last time she can help him. So then we got Honest John and Gideon. You know, basically, these guys are con men or lackeys for hire, so to speak. And they meet a coachman who promises to pay the money if they can find naughty little boys for them to take to Pleasure Island. And, of course, they encounter Pinocchio once again and convince him that he needs to take a vacation there. And then when he gets there, he befriends Lampwick, a delinquent boy that is just one of many of them. And then Pleasure Island looks like a fun place. You know, if you're a little kid watching this movie, you're like, ooh, wow, there's like rides and you could be bad. I mean, they're drinking beer, smoking cigars, playing pool, all the things that, you know, 8-year-olds or whatever, how old Pinocchio's supposed to be, should be doing. So what'd you guys think, Chad, what'd you think of Pleasure Island in this whole sequence?
I love the set piece that they provide for Pleasure Island, because when you first see it, it's very, like you said, it looks very inviting. with brighter colors, cool rides, a carousel, and you know, all sorts of fun looks to be had, fireworks in the background. And then when you actually get to the reality, you see it kind of in ruins, and the set pieces look a lot more dirty. And then, of course, when he starts interacting with Lampwick, they actually, in the billiard room, they do a real good job of giving it kind of that club pool hall type vibe, I think, in there. So I really thought they were spot on this whole sequence and showing how some of the stuff that, you know, what may seem inviting on the surface may not be quite what you think it is if you stray kind of off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, how does Pleasure Island strike with you?
Now I look at it all kinds of different. But watching it, I remember, I don't think I really understood that they were like drinking beer and smoking. I just thought it was like a cool like carnival place. Like, this is a place where I get to go hang out and do all this fun stuff and nobody gets to tell me what to do. Sign me up, you know? Like, I don't remember actually. Maybe I didn't pay attention, or maybe because it was the time that it was that, you know, most everybody in their family had people that smoke and they just did it openly and they drank openly. So maybe that's why I looked at those things and was like, eh, whatever. And now as an adult, I'm like, this place is horrible. This is a germ pool. Oh my God, why is the 8-year-old drinking beer? This, oh, I can't do this.
It's a DCF nightmare.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah,
where are your parents? Oh, wait, never mind.
Yeah. I actually forgot, though, what the whole scheme was. It was like, it had been a long time since I watched it. You know, and, you know, because they're bad, they turn into donkeys.
Or, right.
And, you know, and end up being sold by the coachman.
Yes.
Which is kind of terrifying.
For auction.
Yeah. You know, we see Lampwick transformed. There's other ones that, you know, are fully transformed. Some still have the ability to talk. Pinocchio doesn't quite go through the transformation. He gets the ears. He gets the tail. But he doesn't get the hooves or anything like that. And he actually manages to escape the island and then gets back home. And him and Jiminy find the workshop that's vacant. They get a letter from the Blue Fairy as a dove stating that Geppetto had ventured out to the sea to save Pinocchio from Pleasure Island. But then he was swallowed by a terrible giant whale named Monstro and is now living in his belly. So Pinocchio, determined to rescue his father, jumps into the sea along with Jiminy. They're soon swallowed by Monstro, where he is reunited with Geppetto. Then Pinocchio devises a scheme to make Monstro seize, giving them a chance to escape. So we will pause there. So what'd you guys think of the underwater animation in this? I thought it was quite striking myself. Miranda, what'd you think when they went under the water?
I actually really enjoy this even now. I think it's, yeah, maybe dated, but I think you understand when you're watching a movie that's that old that, like, it's going to look a little dated. But I still enjoy it. The only thing that I was always confused about is, like, why did Geppetto bring the cat and the goldfish with him?
Well, they were on a
cat
boat.
And a goldfish underwater. I'm just saying.
Well, they were. Well, they. I don't think, like, they started
have
underwater.
A neighbor who could feed them.
They were.
Hey, my kid's missing. Can you take care of my cat and my fish, please? I mean,
just saying. I mean, no, they started above water. They just ended up in a whale's belly. That's how they got underwater.
Yeah, but he took a cat and a fish with him. I mean, okay.
It gets lonely on the water, I guess. I don't know.
I guess so.
Chad, what about you with the underwater sequence leading up to Monstro?
Yeah, I think the animation here, I think, is gorgeous, where, especially for the time, it was really, truly groundbreaking, where, I mean, you see all the bubbles from the fish, and when just the movement, that was spectacular, and there's just so much vibrancy and stuff going on, and really, water animation is something that Disney has kind of, it's become one of its calling cards. I mean, between Little Mermaid and Finding Nemo, like, Disney and Pixar have done a great job with animation in the water, and I can't think of any other animation studios that really go to that genre much. I mean, it doesn't feel like there's much other water-based animated movies. So Disney kind of is the king to himself, unless I'm blinking on an obvious one. But
well, there was Shark Tale, but let's not talk about that movie.
Right. But, so I thought this was just great. I mean, and I love the depiction of Monstro. I thought that was great. And the escape, they did a great job of making everything seem fluid with the action sequence of Monstro trying to eat Pinocchio, and just really well done.
Yeah, I mean, Monstro is probably one of my favorite, like, minor characters, I guess, if you want to call them that. I mean, the animation style is incredible. He's just this imposing, you know, figure, you know, this giant sperm whale. The animation style is a little different than the rest of the film. And just the image of him, though, breaking through the water and coming out and trying to get after Pinocchio and Geppetto once they actually do escape. So, continuing with the story, you know, so he gets Monstro to sneeze. It works, but then the whale chases them and smashes their raft. Pinocchio pulls Geppetto to safety in a cave before Monstro crashes into it. Geppetto, Figaro, Cleo, and Jiminy are washed up safely on a beach, but Pinocchio is shown apparently lifeless in a rock pool, which is actually not from drowning. It's from, you know, impact on the rock. But, you know, he believes that he is dead. Back home, Geppetto grieves over Pinocchio with Jiminy Cricket, and the pets also mourn alongside them. The Blue Fairy, however, decides that Pinocchio has proven himself brave, truthful, and selfless, to reward him, the Blue Fairy resurrects Pinocchio, reversing the Pleasure Island curse and turning him into a real boy. Pinocchio awakens and reveals that he is alive and a real human boy, and everybody celebrates. Jiminy steps outside to thank the fairy and is rewarded with a single solid gold badge that certifies him as an official conscience. The end. So, Chad, what did you think about the closing of this movie?
I mean, so this is our second resurrection in as many movies. I go back and forth on this. I think to get to where they wanted to go with the end of Pinocchio's a real boy, it serves as fine, but it becomes, I guess, a little cliched here that we have another, you know, resurrection and stuff like that. What I do enjoy probably the most about this sequence is when Jiminy receives his conscience badge. I think that's a great moment. And, I mean, it is rewarding in how happy Geppetto is with the animals and the clocks going crazy. I mean, that's a memorable scene as well. It does seem like, oh, well, we're going back to this resurrecting well a little bit. I think that's one of my minor, I guess, critiques of this movie, is kind of how they handled that. Because I thought the Monstro getting him to sneeze for them to come out was very clever. And then it felt like, well, you know, we just had this Blue Fairy that could always come in and just fix whatever problem we had at the very end.
Yes, kind of a... I guess, what is it called? Deus? No, not Deus. Whatever. Miranda, what about you? What did you think of the end of this film?
I find it very endearing because if you get down to it, basically, he just wanted to be a good kid, a good person, and Geppetto just wanted to be a dad. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to is, like, he just wanted to be a dad, and he found the way to do that, and he just wanted to be the best kid he could for Geppetto, and that kind of is, like, kind of pulls at your heartstrings a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was trying to say was the Blue Fairy is kind of, like, probably one of the earliest Deus Ex Machinas in a movie, mm-hmm. where it's just mm-hmm. a convenience that, you know, she has the ability to save... You know, Pinocchio earlier reversed the nose growing, and then to turn him into a real boy. But no, I thought this was one thing about this movie. If you you sit back and you kind of analyze it a little bit, the emotional high points are very cleverly spaced out. So you know, you have the beginning, you know, he becomes to life, and then. you have the next part where he goes over to, you know, he gets involved with Stromboli, and then you have the whole thing with Pleasure Island, and then you have the whole thing with Monstro. So it's not like one, you get a chance to breathe and you get a chance to kind of build back up to these high parts. And another thing was that it really showed the power of animation to audiences, that, you know, there's a lot of things that were accomplished in this movie that you could never even think of accomplishing and making and pulling it off to be believable in live action, like, you know, fishing off a boat in the belly of a whale, you know, those kind of things. So just what are your overall thoughts, though, Chad, on this as a whole movie?
I think this is a tremendous movie. This is honestly, now watching it, is a movie I appreciate more each time I watch it. And it's probably, I mean, I want to go through the rankings of these, but when I started my little project, this was easily my favorite of the first five or six. And, you know, I think it'll hold its own as we traverse through this series. I think the animation for its time is brilliant. I think, like you said, the emotional high points hit you there. It has kind of four kind of distinctive acts and different scenes that you can call upon, where there's something both in the introduction and the Stromboli scene and the Pleasure Island scene, and then with Monstro. And then also, I really think, like, between Geppetto, who we didn't talk about much, but he's also an endearing character, just somebody that, you know, you always did want him, you know, if he wanted to be dad, he's getting this kind of new lease on life. And I really do think Jiminy Cricket is probably one of the better secondary characters they've ever created. So all in all, I think just a tremendous effort, and certainly not a sophomore slump from an artistic standpoint for the studio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all great points. Miranda, what about you? What's your overall closing thoughts on the movie?
Overall, it's never been one of my, like, absolute favorites, but I love certain aspects of it, and I love the lessons that it tries to teach, even if some of it is a little concerning now and a little dated. I think the overall, like, that someone is always watching out for you, that people can change, because clearly Geppetto is not originally depicted as, like, he's a kind soul, but if you look around at things in the house and other things he carves, like, there's, like, some questions there. So I think, like, he learns to love and care for someone other than himself. You have someone watching out. There's just all of these life lessons that are really thrown into this movie, and it's not as long as most Disney movies, I mean, especially now. So overall, it's not ever been my favorite, but I think there's a lot of lessons that can be taken away from it. I think there's a lot of good points, and I think it also shows the growth of Disney. Even though it's movie number two, it shows the growth of where they've come. Like, we did this, and now we've moved to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty amazing that this is only the second full-length animated feature, you know, when you put them up against each other. I mean, Snow White and Seven Dwarfs was groundbreaking, but this is just, like, you know, a giant leap. I mean, you know, when you look at, like, another company like Pixar, I don't think made as quick a leap off the bat. You know, every movie they kind of added something, you know, whether it's Monsters, Inc. with the fur, whether it's, like Chad mentioned, with Finding Nemo, with the underwater scenes, which are incredible, with the sunlight and all that. I mean, that's still, to this day, you know, one of my, like, you know, kind of like, I probably catch myself, like, sitting there, like, with my mouth open, like, watching, like, oh my God, I can't believe this is animation, kind of thing. So that's kind of where Pinocchio lies. So, of course, it's Disney, and we all love the Disney theme park. So we're going to kind of talk about where Pinocchio has landed in the theme parks. Now, it's mostly out on the West Coast. We could talk about, you know, you have Pinocchio's Daring Journey, which is out in Disneyland. I don't know if any of you guys have gone on that at all, which is a typical dark ride, kind of similar to Snow White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just your kind of typical dark ride that gives you an overview of the movie and scenes, and
I love those rides. Along. Yeah, I've not been on that one.
Kind of a Reader's Digest, you know. Here's your high points of your scenes. Here's, like, you know, putting you in the setting, and then move on, kind of thing. They are ride-throughs on YouTube, though, just so you know. If you're if you don't think you're going to make it out to California, to Disneyland, highly suggest going and seeking that out. There's also the Storyland canal boats, which you actually go on a boat and you go into Monstro's mouth, which I did. I did go on that when I was, I think I was probably 6 years old when I went on that ride. The only time I've been to California in my life. So I kind of remember that. I did go on, like I said, I went on YouTube and watched it, and it definitely was not the same ride as it was then, because there's a lot of scenes on of little. Basically, what it is you go through there, and they're kind of like miniature sets of some of the classic animated movies, but they have like, you know, like some of the more modern ones, like Agrabah and Beast Castle and all these other different ones. So it's definitely also another suggestion, but it's somewhere that, you know, I don't know if you've been there, Miranda, but Chad, I bet you've been there to Pinocchio's Village House in Fantasyland.
Yes. Walt Disney World, you know, you can maybe say like some of the overall design of Fantasyland gives you some vibes of Pinocchio, and I understand that, but I guess the main thing in Disney World in the Magic Kingdom is Pinocchio's Village House, which is, you know, it's kind of your typical Italian type fare, mostly pizza,
flatbreads, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, have like a chicken parmesan sandwich and stuff like that. I don't think it's one of the standout quick service places in all of Disney World, but it does seem to be a landing spot that's popular for me and my family. And I do like that it's one of the few restaurants that overlooks a ride, as they do have a couple of windows in the restaurant that look down on It's a Small World. So that's cool. If you get one of those spots, you can look down and see the boats coming out on It's a Small World.
Well, sometimes you're lucky if you can get a table at some of these places.
I mean, this is in the heart of Fantasyland, mm-hmm. so it is one of those where, like, noon, it's going to be mass hysteria. Yeah,
this is one of those
in Pinocchio's Village.
Also. Yeah, this is one of those divide and conquers. You know, you get the table, you get the food deals. We actually did eat there back in 2018. We spent a day and a half in the Magic Kingdom, so on that half day, we did I believe we did do lunch in that, because we didn't do Fantasyland, I think, the first day. I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago. Miranda, have you ever been to the Pinocchio Village House?
I have not. I do remember it being, like, really crazy. So, and there were things, there were places that, like, my husband really had. So our, like, sit-down, quick service, whatever they call it, that we did was the Casey's Hot Dogs. That was, like, a childhood favorite for him. So that's the one that we did in the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, that's my next time I go to Magic Kingdom, I'm definitely hitting Casey's. I didn't hit
that. It was so good. Like, I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah, if you're a hot dog fan, definitely. Definitely go to Casey's. Also, you know, we talked about it quite a bit. Pleasure Island. Now, did either of you ever go to Pleasure Island when it was open? And were you old enough to partake in adult beverages when you were there?
So I was never old enough to really go to Pleasure Island. And by the time, I want to think you had to be 18. For most of the stuff to get in there.
Yeah,
or maybe 21.
You had to be 18 to get into Pleasure Island. But.
So I turned 18 in 2004. I took my last family Disney trip in 2003 and then didn't go until 2009 on my honeymoon again. So I had that 6-year hiatus, and Pleasure Island closed in that point of time, but I do remember it kind of in the on the like Disney videos you would get, mm-hmm. the VHSs and all, mm-hmm. have people dancing and stuff like that, so it looked like kind of an interesting place. I don't know, it doesn't seem like they really took much of the besides the name, I don't think it was really much theming wise like Pinocchio, correct, from what I've seen?
No, it was basically, so there were all these different clubs that were themed. I went there and went there in now when I was 21 when I went, and this was in I believe it was spring break of 1994. So I always forget sometimes how younger you guys are. Yeah, I went there. I had gone to Orlando with three of my fraternity brothers, and actually a girl that we knew in college was down there with her mom on vacation, and me and one of my fraternity brothers and her went to Pleasure Island. I was 21. They were both 19. So they got stamped on one hand, and then I got stamped on the other hand, and then had a wristband as well. So they were very strict about the preventing underage drinking, although I did sneak test tube shots to my friend Lauren, and also was very panicked that we were going to get tossed out. I mean, I did, my one fraternity brother with me did get upset because he could not drink, and I proceeded to get very drunk that night and had a ball. I almost did one of those things. It's like where you put a Velcro suit on and then you jump into a wall kind of thing. I almost did it. But the thing about Pleasure Island was that it had a lot of different themed clubs. There was an 80s club. There was one called A-Trax, which was a 70s club. There was a rock and roll club that had a live band playing a lot of, you know, popular songs. There was a comedy club. There was the Adventurers Club, which was a, had like actors in there, like they were on, you were like on safari or something like that. There was a comedy club as well. So, it was a fun place, but it got kind of crowded, and it was one of those, once you got past a certain age, it wasn't as much fun, because I did go back in 2001, and I was, I was 29, almost 29 at the time, and I was married to my ex-wife, and, we went there after a day of, at the end of a day of like, doing shopping and stuff. And it totally was like a totally different scene for me. Like, we had bags and I was getting annoyed because I went to go get two drinks and they wouldn't give me two drinks because they had to see the other person. So I had to get, it was one of those things like you had to be in at like 21 to like 25 to really, if you enjoy it. I mean, I'm sure there was stuff, probably as you got a little older, settled in with a Kungaloosh at the Adventurers Club, I guess, which is a famous drink that they had over there. But, I wasn't sad to see it go when they kind of changed it over to Disney Springs and what it is today. Miranda, did you ever go past Pleasure Island in your time?
No, because by the time I was actually able to, like, my first trip to Disney, it wasn't there anymore.
Okay. So, like I said, though, it was like, I don't think you guys missed much. I don't know if you ever saw the Simpsons episode where they went to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Yeah.
And there was a scene where, like, I think Marge and Homer were in some club dancing around, and Marge goes, "Oh, my God, isn't it wonderful that it's New Year's Eve every day, every night?" And the guy's pushing a broom going by, goes, "Somebody kill me. Shoot me now." That's what it was. They did that every night. It was like, they did the countdown and everything like that. I mean, it was good in theory, but it got kind of old quickly as you got older, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, there was nothing new every time you went. You didn't get anything new. You got the same thing every time.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't change from 1994 to 2001. It seemed almost exactly the same when I went there. So that's going to wrap up Pinocchio. But guys, we have another movie that came out in 1940. Right on the horizon in our next episode, which is Fantasia. What are you guys looking forward to the most? Now, Chad, I know you've rewatched it already once, but what are you looking forward to most about talking about Fantasia?
I'm interested to see what y'all think about Fantasia, mm-hmm. because in rewatching it, it's a weird movie. I mean, I don't know of any other way to say it. Like, I know it was a project that was near and dear to Walt, but it's an interesting movie. So I think overall they certainly were not just gonna keep the status quo with their studio. With the first three movies they put out, they each had something different to offer.
Okay, Miranda, what about you? What are you kind of looking forward to about Fantasia?
I guess Miranda, it's weird because Fantasia is one of her all-time favorites.
Oh, see, that's what we like here. We have differing opinions. and the like. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. I really enjoy Fantasia. Although, again, it's another one that it's been a while. I've probably seen it more recently than I had seen. Pinocchio, which we just talked about for how long. But, it's going to be, because there's a bunch of short films, basically, all put together. And I'm very interested in seeing that. And then, of course, then we're going to move on to some of the other classics after that. So, let's kind of talk about what everybody, though, has kind of going on right now. Miranda, what's going on over in Geek and Sassy World?
In Geek and Sassy World, Miranda is tabulating ballots for the Sassies.
Ooh, very cool.
So I am counting and tabulating those. I am the tabulator, and Jenny is the person I go to if I need a tiebreaker. So that's how that works for anybody that was curious. I do not vote at all. I create the ballot, tabulate the ballot. She breaks it if it needs to be done, but that's my thing right now is charts and graphs and craziness. And I don't know what we have planned after that. We had talked about like five things and we were so proud of ourselves. We had like our next five planned out, which if you know Geek and Sassy, that's like a big deal. We yes. wing it a lot, which I say wing it, but like we prep, like we know a topic we really want to discuss and we decide, you know what? We flow better when we just talk about it. Like we don't prep out these big, long, like bullet points for what we want to talk about. Cause we just, her and I flow better together when we just talk. So I don't know what we're going to be doing next. I have an old project, that's going to become a new project again. I am one half of Lady and the Beard.
Ooh.
And we are resurrecting Lady and the Beard. We got one episode in, basically it's us introducing ourselves. We recorded a second episode, the computer like ate half of it and we got real discouraged. So we took a big break. But Lady and the Beard is coming back. So I have that in the works. And of course, still trying to move overseas. So a lot of little projects at once.
All right. Now, Chad, we mentioned it earlier about the North-South Connection, your brand new venture with JT Rosero. Kind of like, you know, give like a brief synopsis of what that feed is going to be all about, brand new feed. I'll look for it on iTunes. And kind of like what you have coming up on that feed.
Sure. The North-South Connection is going to be a quartet of four of Justin's shows, which is going to be No Holds Barred and Jeff Learns Wrestling and Extreme Three-Way Dance. And then mine and his show, the Wrestling War Zone, are all going to be there. So those are kind of going to be the staples of the feed. But then also with the brand new feed, this also gives us some opportunities to do some kind of one-offs, some pod blasts, some stuff that I'm going to be doing for the Greatest WCW Ever project. And then I have a couple of other things that I've thought about and started working on as well. So just be on the lookout, subscribe on iTunes, and give us a shot.
Awesome. Looking forward to listening to a lot of fun shows over there. Justin and Scott are still going to do the Place to Be podcast, and as well as Body Pressure Luck will still be on the wrestling feed, where that is hosted by Justin and Jordan Duncan, and I'm there to help out with the games every episode. But it's a lot of fun, and hopefully we're going to divide and conquer and look for a lot of great content over there. I feel like there's going to be a lot of Southern wrestling talk on that feed.
At least as far as I'm concerned, probably. I don't know, though. I don't know. I mean, there'll certainly be some WCW stuff, but for the projects I have coming up, I'm trying to maybe look at more of an international flavor or some of the indie stuff. So I think it'll be a little more for, at least on that regard, the projects that I'm started doing research on will have a more, I guess, hardcore wrestling slant to them. If that interests you.
Congratulations on the new feed there. Super excited for you guys.
Yeah, thanks. It's fun, kind of broadening the family, so to speak. We have the two Place of Nation feeds, Jenny Position, North-South Connection. So everything, you could want in pop culture, wrestling, sports, entertainment, we're going to cover it on one of these many feeds, and support each other throughout all these ventures, which is awesome. This is what we're all about here. As for me, over on the wrestling feed, that's right, you heard me, the wrestling feed, I have two new shows coming. First is called The Evolution Of, where there's going to be like kind of like I plan to do it maybe quarterly. We'll see how it goes, where we're going to take a look at a wrestler that's had quite a lengthy career and kind of just go through it, almost like a biography, and talk about the different characters, different incarnations, signature feuds, signature matches. We talk about the gear, we talk about the music, everything. So check that out. First episode should be live by the time you hear this. So it's The Evolution Of The Game, Triple H, featuring Mr. Scott Criscullo. Also, I have brought The Great Debate over to the wrestling feed with a wrestling-only version. So the first episode of that was coming up, and that features JR Sunino D'Amato, Tim Capel, and Matt Souza. So check that out over here on the PlayStation Pop feed. I just had a recent episode of The Great Debate proper featuring Jacob Williams, Logan Crosland, Scott Shiflett, and Sean Kidd, a bunch of basically newbies, kind of break them in and bring them into the podcast game. Also, check out new episodes of Laugh and Theater coming soon. Steve Willey is going to be coming by to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, as well as Jordan Duncan will be coming in to watch Tommy Boy. Can you believe it is Tommy Boy's, I believe, 25th anniversary this year?
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of blows your mind that came out.
Well,
so
surreal there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And also check out the next episode of Year in Pop, 1981. Not exactly sure when it's coming out. Current events are going to dictate when we're going to be able to record that. You know, it was based on people's inability to, not unavailability due to certain trips to big events, but that may be, curtailed, so to speak. We'll have to see what happens. But I want to thank, once again, Miranda and Chad for getting together and talking about one of my favorite topics, Disney animated films. So, for Ms. Miranda Berthold and Mr. Chad Campbell, I am Andy Athan. Thank you for joining us here on Pop Goes the Classics, and we'll talk to you next time when we go over Fantasia. Take care, everybody.
There are no strings on me.